downtown for three. It's 56-45 at the half.
You're listening to Hamster Wheel Sports, the podcast where we refuse to discuss any topics that fall under the category of sissy or are not relating directly to sports. I'm here with my Hamster Wheel Sports co-host, Book Bratch. Here he is.
Hello. Sorry, I was just caught up watching this video of Harden pushing Chalmers to the ground.
Yes.
I'm not up on today's action. I hear that a lot happened, so...
It's okay. We got GIFs, we got tweets, we got videos. We're ready to go.
We're going to fully immerse you into what's happened in the league so far. So anyways, Book Bratch is with me. And then we got a new addition to the roster, a key free agent acquisition, director James Ryan.
Bang!
There he is. So, here we are. We're... officially inside of the NBA season, and it's not going to end for another 6 months or so. And wow, 1 week, and it's been a whirlwind. It's been a windfall of activity. And yeah, there he goes. Here goes James Harden getting into a little scuffle with Mario Chalmers, who's in his second stint as a Memphis Grizzly.
If you guys could be watching this GIF right now, I don't even know. You got to look it up at home.
This is the most physical, one of the most physical NBA fights I've seen.
This is the hardest I've seen James Harden compete in years.
Yeah, man. But you can tell he's kind of, you can tell he's kind of shielding himself with the referee.
With the referee, yeah.
Grit and grind won't die. It's Mario Chalmers in his second stint has finally absorbed the grit and the grind.
Did they beat the Rockets today?
Yeah, 98-90.
Do you think they can go 82-0?
No.
There's a shot, though, right?
I think it's going to be tough for them to beat the Warriors again. But
yeah, fair enough.
No, the Memphis Grizzlies...
81-1, though. It's pretty good.
The Grizzlies always have a regular season victory over the Warriors.
They do?
It's true.
They play them really tough.
And it's usually early in the season. But I'll tell you what, I thought that...
I'm pretty sure they won a couple of games against them last year.
I think they might have, yeah.
I thought that the Memphis Grizzlies would be good this year and make a playoff spot. And because, you know, you got to have a good point guard and a good center. Well, that's actually pretty old-fashioned. I'm going to strike that from the record because it's no longer true.
Well, defensively, you needed... If you have a strong point guard and a strong center, you'll be at least decent defensively. And they've got that down.
And I feel like Michael Conley was reaching places as a player that he hadn't before in last year's playoff series against the Spurs.
That's true. That was a series.
He was going toe-to-toe with Kawhi Leonard, just shot for shot in that really exciting game four.
You know,
I think they got what it takes to really make the playoffs here.
Yeah, I mean, I'd kind of forgotten about that whole playoff series, but to be honest, I did not expect much from the Grizzlies this year, you know, after who they lost and where they were at last year, and I really like Dave Fizdale, so I was kind of hoping they could do something, but, you know, we're only a few games into the season, but I was pretty surprised by, you know.
Well, I definitely did not have them making the playoffs, which
no,
is how
me
much
neither.
Better the West got. But it'll be awesome if they do make it. I love Gasol. He's such a fun player to watch.
No doubt.
So you didn't think that Conley and Gasol on a team would be enough? Because all they really lost was rotation players. Old rotation players.
Yeah, but they also were just getting older. And
They were old rotation players, right? You know, like...
And the West got just so much better. I think that was the big thing. It wasn't so much that the Grizzlies were going to be a bad team, per se.
And you look at this team right now, like it's not good. I don't know.
Who is Jarrell Martin?
I don't know who Jarrell Martin is.
He's
one of their starters.
Yeah.
I feel like that's true every year. Like even last year, I feel like I can't name 2/3 of the Grizzlies roster.
Well, when,
that's a good point.
When they get Jermichael Green back, so he's going to miss 3 or 4 weeks. He's a nice player.
He's good.
Chandler Parsons, how's he been so far?
He has barely played, and to be honest, I think him to be a quality player.
I think
point.
The last time I honestly watched a minute of Chandler Parsons playing was probably 4 years ago. But
really, I can't remember seeing him on a basketball court in years.
I just find it amazing that Mario Chalmers logged 26 minutes in a team that just beat the Rockets, a championship contender.
He's got heart.
He's got a lot of finals experience. Yeah, so let's talk about how the season's kind of unfolded so far. Let's talk about slow starts and undefeated teams.
Well, Matt, I think that we've kind of already established what the season is going to look at. I know it's early, but you can map trends and you can kind of see where stuff is going to map out. And you know, if you look at the standings right now, I think a lot of stuff will hold pat. You know, we all kind of expect the Grizzlies to finish first in the West. And the Warriors at the ninth spot, you know, they're probably going to fall just short of making the playoffs. So I think we can all agree on that, right?
Well, it's not looking good for the Warriors. I think it's pretty grim. I think you should blow it up because, I love it when championship teams kind of stumble out of the gate.
This barely qualifies as stumbling.
It doesn't matter.
It's two losses, irrelevant. Man.
It's two losses.
How long did it take them to get to two losses last year? Probably like a month or something, right? I mean, they lost the first game also last year, but...
But they could
I don't think it was that long.
But they could win a championship from any seed in the West. And two early losses really means nothing. I remember a few years ago, I think it was 2008, the Spurs started the season 0-5.
Yep.
And then they went on to have like one of the best records in the West. So... Really, early struggling doesn't matter at all. And they're not even struggling.
They like the first game, they didn't have Draymond at the end, no Iguodala, and they lose by 1 point it was literally a fraction of a second, and they win that game. And then the Grizzlies, I mean, they will never shoot that bad from three again. Yeah. It will just never happen. I watched that game, and where they go 12-for-38, and they had good looks too, and they were just missing.
I do think if the Warriors can make the 8 seed that they could probably challenge the Grizzlies. I'll give them that.
I love how the Grizzlies give them trouble.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Even without Tony Allen, because Tony Allen owns Klay Thompson's soul. And that was always a big reason why. But no Tony Allen. And they still pulled it out.
All right, let me ask you guys a real loser of a question. The Chicago Bulls are 0-2. The Dallas Mavericks are 0-4. Who finishes with the better record?
Has to be the Mavs.
Yeah, because
the Mavs have too many vets.
Yeah, and Carlisle, he'll keep them going. Like, they'll pull out wins. Like, they still have some players. The Bulls right now are barely an NBA team.
I know they have to face more West teams, but...
The Bulls are just a waiver wire nightmare right now.
Exactly. Dallas has real players and a real team.
And amazingly, like, two... Like Bobby Portis and Mirotic now out.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just funny going into that first game against the Raptors.
Games. Yeah.
You're going to be that first game of Raptors. And already it was like, man, the Bulls are terrible. Just looking at the roster. And then Mirotic, you know, he's going to be out for a while. And Portis, you don't even know if he's going to be a good player at all. But at least, there might be something there. And then he does that. But with his crazy eyes, I was not surprised. I knew it was coming. I was waiting for this day. Justin Holiday. Is he? Oh, no. Robin Lopez. Poor Robin Lopez. Lopez is too good for that team.
That's fair. When the Knicks traded him, that was a bad deal. And
he's such a good soul.
He's a good guy.
Robin deserves a bad
guy. I like Robin way more than Brooke. I am strongly on Team Robin.
I'm not too worried about Robin Lopez because he's carved out such a role. He's so well respected and coveted by a lot of teams. So I think by the end of his career, how old is he?
He's not that old.
Yeah. By the end of his career, he's going to find himself a nice spot.
He's not 33.
On a Warriors like championship contender roster.
Well,
I was going to say, I'm sure someone would try and trade for him
not spending like a purgatory, like a lifetime on the Bulls. I would like until then he can just play some games, teach some young guys. But I do agree. I love Robin Lopez. I always get him on my 2K teams. Nice. By the way, guys, I got NBA 2K18.
Oh.
And I started a Boston Celtics season mode, and so it's the league is like basically the rosters as is, only I added myself to the Celtics, and I made myself 88, so I'm the third best player on the team.
Yeah, of course. You want it to be realistic, right?
Exactly. But I didn't have to like trade in my VC points or anything. I just boosted all my stats.
Nice.
But I think either the game knows that, or it's just karma coming back to bite me because I can't hit a shot to save my life with my guy. He comes out onto the floor. He loves jacking up shots. He turns the ball
over. Does he?
He turns the ball over all the time. He makes wild passes, and he tries to be the hero. 100% of the time, he's out there. So, in reality, people would rip this guy apart. There's no reason to keep him on the court. But in my season mode, he's a star and a cornerstone for the Celtics. So, throughout the season, I'm going to be giving you guys updates on how my Celtics season is going. Right now, we're in the preseason. We have one more preseason game. My Boston Celtics versus the Hornets. And then I'm kicking it off. Tip-off night against LeBron.
Wow.
I like how so far, after this exciting first week of NBA, the three teams we've talked about are the Memphis Grizzlies, the Chicago Bulls, and Matt Seely's fictional Boston Celtics.
We're off to a great start, guys.
Okay, well then let me ask...
The teams that all the listeners at home really want to know about. Yeah.
Okay, well then you're right, Book. I got to pull up my socks and we got to do better. So here's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the Houston Rockets, who we saw play tonight, lose to those Grizzlies. And I want to get your guys' thoughts on Chris Paul's injury, his fit there, and how James Harden is balling out.
Well, I would say first off, their transactions of bringing in Bamute and PJ Tucker, they flat out said it was to beat the Warriors, right? And that really funky lineup that D'Antoni was kind of experimenting with in the preseason, and he immediately went to it in the first game with PJ Tucker at the center, at the five. And that was the winning lineup, right? They won with P.J. Tucker. Clint Capella did, come in there, and they kind of went in between the two. Mm-hmm. But P.J. Tucker saw a lot of crunch time minutes at the five, which is super interesting. And that's one of those things that you can kind of only get away with, you know, when you're going against Golden State's death lineup.
Yep.
But, yeah, Bamute and P.J. Tucker, playing those guys at the four and the five. And now you really can switch everything. Those guys can guard the perimeter. And that was super interesting.
For sure.
And D'Antoni immediately went to just an 8-man rotation. Mm-hmm. And he played it very tight.
As he is wont to do. Yeah, well, and I think a lot of people going into the season, you know, people had high expectations for the Rockets. But at the same time, you know, it did kind of feel like they lost some depth, you know, losing
Beverly
and Lou Williams and, you know, multiple potential six man of the years. And so I think some people thought, you know, even though they're getting Chris Paul, this all-star, you know, they might be getting, you know, a little bit less deep. But actually, you know, like you said,
they've
found depth in a different way.
They definitely don't have depth. After those eight guys, mm-hmm. Nene, you know, he's getting older. We'll see. But
he had some moments last year.
But they're a really solid defensive team, though.
Mm-hmm.
Ariza is also a kind of a perfect kind of guy against the Warriors. And Chris Paul definitely did not look good in that first game, just in terms of that fit. But mm-hmm. I mean, it's the first game. The style that D'Antoni wants is so incredibly different than anything Chris Paul has ever played. But I refuse to believe that it's not going to work.
I thought the same thing when I watched that first game with the Rockets and Warriors. You know, Chris Paul, I think we're seeing that transition for him into a Dwayne Wade type, playing no more than 60 games in a season. So if he has a knee injury, the only thing that makes sense to do is sit him and let this championship-level roster do its thing. And then in playoffs, when their rotations get smaller and you need that kind of cerebral half-court offense, then Chris Paul will be great and they'll make it work. And it's just you want that asset on the floor. So I'm so ready to be patient with Chris Paul, and I'm not hitting the panic button at all. I'm not saying it's a bad fit. I think that's jumping to conclusions. I think we'll really see how the fit comes into play in the playoffs.
And also, like, even though he didn't have a great opening game, the guy's still like, oh yeah, he only scored 4, but he still had 11 assists, 8 boards, 2 steals, a block, and he was a main catalyst of that of the beginning of the fourth, where we went on a little bit of a run to get themselves back in the within striking distance.
He makes winning plays. That's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, yeah, he obviously he sat in crunch time because of the injury, but he was still a part of that victory, and he still like he wasn't hurting the team. He just wasn't helping as much as Chris Paul normally does help his team.
That's a good point.
But he wasn't hurting them.
And also, look at how the Rockets faded into nothingness in the playoffs last year. James Harden couldn't be that fiery, intense leader the team needed. That's what Chris Paul is also going to bring.
Hopefully. I mean, his record in the playoffs is a little iffy. But, I mean, my thought on Chris Paul is that, you know, I think the only thing that could really hold him back from being a great fit with the Rockets is his personality, you know, because if they find that, you know, the Rockets are going to find, Mike D'Antoni is going to find a way to use him and is going to find a way to, you know, make him fit with the team. And I think as long as he can buy into that, then they're going to be great, right? Because even if you had Chris Paul, even if Chris Paul was your like Ray Allen, like spot up guy, you know, just like hitting threes, getting some assists, that would still be a huge benefit, right?
You know, but what I was thinking,
that's not really kind of the position I see him wanting.
You know what I was thinking? Even if it's the worst case scenario and he can't play one game this season, his presence around the franchise is valuable. So I'm not worried about this at all. And the Rockets look great. I mean, James Harden just has proven so far in this early season that he's going to be in the talks for MVP consideration this year.
Yep. And another
so good to watch.
Another person who is going to be in talks for MVP consideration this year is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Everyone's
think about his early
loving
start.
The Bucks right now. And why shouldn't you?
It's hard not to.
The other day, he won a game with a steal, a slam dunk, and a block on the other end. What an exciting player.
I got it. And then so far, Antetokounmpo, 38.3 points per game, 9.7 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 block, 2.7 steals. Obviously, you know, he's not going to be keeping those numbers up, but it's still amazing. 67%, like he's shooting 67% at a high volume. And you know, Portland's a very poor defensive team, but he did it also against Cleveland and Charlotte. Although, I must say, though, in that game against Cleveland, it's funny because LeBron, I mean, the guy does not give full effort during the regular season.
They were slow.
But when LeBron is like, challenged in some way, or he like feels a need to prove something, it's funny how there's just a noticeable difference suddenly in his game. And you watch the fourth quarter of that game against Milwaukee, and the one I think of the most is when Antetokounmpo tried to score on him in the fast break, and LeBron just rejected him, which I just, after what, like, Antetokounmpo is the best in transition in the league, he's got to be, right? No one's better than him. And for LeBron just to reject him like that, and he took it to him there at the end. Just, and he kind of did the things that make LeBron stand out, where at the very end there, LeBron was the point guard, right? They weren't running any true point guard.
Exactly.
It was just LeBron, and he was just standing back there, and he was just facilitating, and he was hitting everyone. He was hitting Korver. It was basically LeBron staying there and everyone setting screens for Korver. And if you just gave a fraction of a space for Korver, LeBron was going to hit him with that perfect pass. And that's what makes him stand apart. And that's why LeBron is still better than Antetokounmpo. Mm-hmm. But
Giannis is getting there too, right? Like
you see
him bringing the ball up the court. And it's ridiculous. You have this guy with, you know, an 8-foot wingspan almost, and he's just flying up the court, you know? He dunks in 2 dribbles. It's pretty remarkable. And really, I think what's kind of setting him apart, you know, he's obviously going to be an incredible offensive player, but
his two-way play is really what's going to take him to the next level, I think.
Yeah, Woody, he led the Bucks last year in points, rebounds, assists, blocks, and steals, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not blocks.
But I don't know, man.
Maybe along, like, statistically eligible guys.
So, Andrew Wiggins hit an exciting game winner against the Thunder the other day. What do you got? How do you guys like
I watched that game. That was awesome. And it was nice because the Bulls are, did not get off to a good start there. The Wolves did not get off to a good start there. I just assume a team with Jimmy Butler are the Bulls.
Fair enough.
And you kind of saw some struggles that people kind of thought, just in the sense that there is definitely offensive redundancy when it comes to Butler and Wiggins. But that was a good win. I mean, first they beat the Jazz, who've looked pretty good so far. And then that game against the Thunder, that was a great game. Of course, Carmelo hit the go-ahead three there. And then Wiggins, he didn't call bank. But he's Canadian, so I don't know. Do Canadians call bank? But what was really interesting, though, was that in crunch time, Wiggins was kind of being the main option there at the end, which is very interesting because that was a question whether you'd run the offense more through Butler than with Wiggins. And Butler has been more so kind of the role he played with the Bulls before he became that elite option when Rose was still kind of the guy and Butler was just that strong defender who did the little things, who could also chip in offensively. And that's kind of what Butler's been doing. Like, what I've watched their games and he hasn't played bad, but he's clearly got a smaller role in the offense. We'll see how that is.
Do you think that's as a result of Thibodeau coaching? Saying this is how we'll work best?
Yeah, and I think part of it is just like, is they're just clearly the best player offensively, I should say. Clearly the best offensive player on the team is Towns.
Yeah,
definitely. Like, this guy is probably the most versatile scorer in the league.
Yeah, and it makes sense, right? You know, in the past, there's been teams where Butler was the best option, and he clearly isn't now. He's still a great option, absolutely, but, you know, I think Thibodeau is smart enough to realize who he has.
Yeah, they just gotta get their defense together, and that's gonna be the big thing.
Absolutely.
I mean, this team's gotta be able to score.
But it's looking good for them to make a playoff spot. Let's look at the other team in that game, the Thunder. The Thunder have been interesting this year. They had a resounding victory over the Knicks. And then they...
Congratulations.
They lost to... Who was it? Who'd they lose to?
They lost to the Jazz and the T-Wolves.
Okay, so they lost to the... Right. So they're a losing record. But so what do you guys think of the new look Thunder?
I mean, so far we haven't seen... Definitely, I don't think we've seen the best of the Thunder. You look at them defensively, and there is just great potential there. Like, you see some possessions where their ability to switch with just the athleticism on the floor. Like, this is a team that should be a very good defensive team. Patterson is banged up, and so he's kind of been playing limited minutes to start here, so we haven't really been able to see him in the lineups, because I think there's going to be some interesting lineups where he actually plays at the five. But you just look at Paul George, Robertson, Adams, I mean, even Melo. Melo, at times, you know, he can actually do some stuff there defensively, and I think the fit is good for him at the four. They're going to be a very good defensive team. And then you look at offensively, Russ has been playing very well. And I think it still looks like he's going to be putting up some crazy stats this year. I think they haven't shot the ball great, but I don't think that's a whole ton to get concerned about. I know I watched the last game, and Paul George, he could not hit anything. And he was 6 for 20, 1 for 8 from 3. I mean, that's not something I think to be worried about. There's one thing we know about Paul George, he can shoot. I think they're gonna be a good team. I'm still up on them. They probably should have won that last game. That was a little bit of a fluky shot. It's funny because that was the end of that game was kind of one of those funny things where they're down by two, right? And if Melo hits a long two and they tie the game, that ball goes, I mean, that game goes to overtime, right?
Yeah.
But because he hit the three, and they were up by one, Minnesota pushes super hard to get that bucket up, you know?
Yeah.
Like if it was a tied game, they would not have done that. They would not have risked, like, it was a risky inbound pass, and Wiggins was a little out of control there. It was one of those funny things.
That's interesting.
Where it's like, because they took the lead, that's why they lost.
Right, right. Was the loss of the Jazz there, the Jazz, I see they're starting Mitchell at shooting guard, this rookie who's really good in the preseason, like really good.
Really good.
But, I mean, the Jazz are a respectable team, right? Like,
yeah, I didn't actually pick them to make the playoffs, but I watched their game against the Thunder, and I watched their games against the... I've actually watched a decent bit of all three of their games. And they look good. Like, they're going to be a really good defensive team, and actually I'm starting to flip on that maybe they will make the playoffs.
Interesting. Who's their main... how do they do offense, or do they win with, like, defensive efforts?
Well, they run it through Rubio. Rubio... lots of pick and roll. Rodney Hood was kind of looked at as the guy that needs to pick up Gordon Hayward's production. And I think ultimately, if they want to have a successful year, that is what he's got to do. But Derek Favors has looked pretty good so far. And I've actually been kind of up on him having a bounce back year. And then, Mitchell. He looked really good. He killed it in the summer league, I believe. And so far, he hasn't been able to find his shot, but he could definitely be a guy that can make up for some of what you're losing with Hayward in terms of production. Yeah, this is a really good defensive team. And Rubio Gobert is just a killer pick-and-roll combo.
Well, I think now with the Jazz 2-1 and Hayward out with a devastating injury, it's not time to ask the question. Is Gordon Hayward overrated?
No. I mean, overrated actually is a hard thing to judge because I think it was ESPN or SI like had him ranked ridiculously at like 16 or something stupid, and I was like, nah, Gordon Hayward's not the 16th best player, but I do think he would have been the best player on the Celtics this year because he's a lot of people underrate him defensively. He's a fine defensive player. He's not, obviously he's not Kawhi Leonard, but he's not bad. He's a fine defensive player, and he's a great scorer. He can score in isolation. He's a great spot-up shooter. He's a guy that doesn't need the ball to produce. I definitely don't think he's overrated. I mean, the Jazz are going to be a noticeable step back. I just still think they can claw their way into the playoffs. And actually, one guy that's interesting with the Jazz is Alec Burks, who... you know, at one point was seen as a guy with potential, and he struggled a lot with injuries. And I was watching that first game, and he performed very well. And he's a guy that, you know, if you can get production out of him, could really help that team. So it looked like in that first game against Denver, he was 7 for 10, 16 points in only 15 minutes. He's a guy that, you know, if he can stay healthy... can be a solid contributor for them.
Well, good for him. He's stuck around the league. He's been on the Jazz forever. So, I mean, now's your time, Alec Burks. I mean, now here's the opportunity. They need scoring.
Yeah,
that's definitely. So, you mentioned Gordon Hayward. Let's look at his team, the Boston Celtics, who it's so weird how we're half an hour into this pod and we haven't even mentioned the Gordon Hayward injury on the first night of the season. Celtics are my favorite team. I fire up that game, and not even 6 minutes into the first quarter, he breaks his leg in the paint there. And it was a very emotional scene. The players were overcome with emotion, the Celtics, the landscape of the entire Eastern Conference has changed. So
that was just so lame. I mean, it was awful. It sucks for Hayward, obviously. But it also just completely ruined that game. It ruined opening night.
Absolutely.
It just made it all like, what's the point of this? Because it was supposed to be like the start of a rivalry, right? Cavs-Celtics? The Celtics could, like, had, you know, this wasn't going to be the Eastern Conference Finals of last year where they just got, you know, whooped.
No.
Like, they had firepower. Kyrie was on the other corner now.
Yep.
And just for that to happen, and I don't know, just looking at it, I just...
I've never seen a more devastating injury live, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was... I remember, because you couldn't really see it at first, like from the angle that we were watching, the broadcast angle, but you could hear the announcer. I can't remember who was announcing that game, but he immediately said, and Gordon Hayward has broken his leg.
Kevin Harlan, maybe?
I think it was Harlan. Yeah. And I remember just being like, what? How does he know he broke his leg? Like, because you couldn't actually see him. He was just on
the ground. Wasn't actually true, but...
Okay, but he, obviously, but then it cut to him and his foot's just bent.
My goodness. Yeah, it actually... I was at work watching the game on my phone, and the feed cut out.
Hopefully your employer's not.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So the feed paused, you know, as it happens when you're watching it at work on your phone. The feed kind of lagged for a second right as it happened, pretty much, and it cut back, and I heard the whistle, and I heard the announcers yelling. And I saw Gordon Hayward down on the ground, and I had no idea what happened. And as soon as they cut to that angle of his ankle, you just knew it was bad. And to see the players, every time they cut to a player, he was just keeled over or just, like, looking away or wincing.
The guy that by far took it the best was Jose Calderon, if you look at the reaction. Yeah. And you want to know why? I know why. Because Jose Calderon had a front row seat to Garmahosa's terrible injury, if you remember that as well. And Calderon, he's like, I've seen this before.
Yep.
That was terrible. And that ruined Garmahosa's career. Of course, Garmahosa was much older. So hopefully Hayward can rebound like Paul George did.
And hopefully the Celtics can too. I mean, I know we're only three games into the season,
but they're
done
this year. They're done.
Well, I mean, tell me what done is, you know?
I mean, they'll make the playoffs, but I don't think they'll get home court.
You think they're a five seed?
Yeah, I think Milwaukee's better than this year, and I think they'll get knocked out in the first round.
Okay, so who's the four seed in the East?
Milwaukee.
Right.
Or Toronto or Washington. Right.
I forgot there were four teams.
The top
four. So they're the five seed.
The top four.
I think Milwaukee has jumped past them.
I think that's fair.
It's just like... You lose Hayward, who in my opinion was their best player on the team, and now, but think of what you gave up to get Hayward, right? Because it wasn't just a straight signing.
That's why
they traded Avery Bradley.
Yep.
And then you Who's also got,
on the
and then you got rid of Jay Crowder as well, and you just got a big hole in that team.
For sure,
it's true, and they don't have a ton of depth, and they also don't have a lot of defenders and rebounders and rim protectors.
I mean, the positive is they're going to be, if you're a fan, it should be a blast to watch
Tatum and
Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
It's reps for those guys. It's building chemistry with Kyrie running that team. And it's going to be, it's not a, when you say write it off, I agree they're not going to probably make the East Finals.
That's what I mean, sorry. Because I was like, people will say,
for sure.
Mean their championship aspirations
Fair
are
enough.
Completely
but,
over.
But there's value to the season in that they can build chemistry, and then when Hayward comes back next year,
mm-hmm.
you're just working him in, as opposed to right now, you'd be working everything in.
Yeah.
I only saw the first game, but Tatum looked good.
Tatum and Brown and Smart. The Celtics look really good. I mean, all the pieces they have. And then they'll get Hayward back. Hopefully they get a bit more depth, especially in the front court. And then I'm excited.
You might be better off to answer this. I have not been someone who thinks a ton of Rozier, but he's played well.
I like Rozier because an aggressive Rozier is a successful Rozier. And I like his... I think he could be a dynamic scorer off the bench. And you know what? So I wonder about their starting lineup, though, because do you like it? Do you think they should start Marcus Smart, or would you start Gordon Hayward at the two and then go like Brown?
Are we talking about next year?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like in the grand scheme of things, like would you start Smart and have Hayward at the three, or would you start Hayward at the two and have Brown or Tatum, Horford?
Well, I thought that they might start Smart this year at some point, because last year they would off, like, Smart play big minutes, and a big part of it was, well, like, sorry, last year, right, they never had Isaiah covering the other team's elite point guard. Like, they had an elite point guard. Like, Isaiah wouldn't guard Lowry,
yeah, of course,
or he wouldn't guard John Wall. And it was often Avery Bradley that would pick up that assignment. And then when Bradley wasn't on the floor, it was Smart. And so with, you know, Kyrie also not being a great defender, I thought Smart would kind of put himself, would kind of be put into that Avery Bradley role.
I think he should, because I think I've always thought Marcus Smart should Marcus start, because he's a gamer. He plays better when he starts, and it's just natural to me. And then I'd round it out with, well, now that Hayward's gone, Jaylen Brown. I would start Al Horford at the five, maybe have Tatum at the four.
I definitely agree Smart's a gamer. Like, when they were getting smoked there against the Cavs there, he was the one, and he was playing. And he was probably playing the worst out of everybody. He was, like, 1-for-10 to start. Was just jacking up threes. I was like, what are you doing, Marcus Smart? Mm-hmm. You should never Marcus start. But then they came back in the second half, and he was just focused. And, like, that one possession where LeBron tried to back him down, and he held his ground, and when LeBron turned, he stripped the ball. I mean, that was just awesome.
Yeah. And he was posting up Kyle Korver.
He posted, like, up everyone.
Take him out of the game.
And it worked.
That was my favorite part of the whole game, actually, just when he started going at Korver. And, you know, Korver must have played 4 minutes in that game. And from the minute he was in, he just went right at him. I love when that happens. I love when, you know, a player just looks at someone else and says, hey, I'm going to score on you every time. Give me the ball. And just makes it happen. And everyone watching it knows it's going to happen. And why do you have Korver out there except to hit a three?
And everyone knows. And that's like getting Korver off the floor.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Because, like, then when the Cavs played Milwaukee, I don't know if you watched the game, but the turning point in that game was Korver hitting, like, four straight threes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. You gotta look at that matchup, and you gotta say, "Hey, every time I'm scoring on you."
That's why they brought Korver there. But if you can, eliminate that possibility, because he's so deadly with LeBron on the floor.
Yeah.
But if you can get him out, like I said, it's huge. So now Brad Stevens knows he has that in his back pocket. So guys, I want to share the wealth here. We're all over the place because we're just fully immersed into the wild first week of the NBA. There's so much going on. We're bouncing all over. But I want to talk about, we talked about my favorite team, the Celtics. I want to talk about your favorite team. So we'll start with you, Book. We'll talk about the Toronto Raptors. How are they doing this year?
It's a little hard to say because their first game was against the hapless Bulls. The second game was against the Sixers with no Embiid in their third game and four nights. So they just smoked both those teams. And then they played the Spurs today, and it was tough. They actually really didn't play that bad. I mean, they just couldn't shoot. Like, that's ultimately what cost them the game. So I don't think there's any big conclusions to draw just from, like, the win from a win-losses perspective. But I think there's enormous conclusions to draw from the way they've played. I think the season high they had for threes attempted last year was 36. They attempted 37 today. I believe they attempted 46 against the 76ers. And I will pull it up right here. They attempted 29 against the Bulls. So immediately they are shooting far more threes. They still got to work on that percentage. They're not hitting a ton, but they are getting good looks.
Is that a result of more ball movement?
Well, that's the next thing, is their assist rate is way up. They've been one of the top assist teams so far after these first few games. They're moving the ball a lot better. Their offense just generally looks a lot more fluid, a lot more motion. And so at least there's hope with the Raptors.
So it's just missed threes.
Yeah.
Like, this is a positive sign that they're changing.
Definitely. They got to start hitting their shots. Aside from CJ Miles,
he's been great.
And Serge Ibaka.
So do they have the personnel to be potent three-point shooters?
That's the big question, right? I think they do. Like, you look at some of the guys that have been kind of missing their shots? See, DeLon Wright, he's been missing quite a few, and that's a legitimate question mark, whether he can hit threes. But yeah. Van Vleet has shown he's a good shooter. He did in the D-League. He's done in the Summer League. And he played, and he hit one tonight. Ibaka has shot the ball well. Lowry, of course, is an elite three-point shooter.
Has DeMar taken any threes yet?
He hit one tonight, actually, and that was his first one. He took only, like, two the first two games. So he's 2 for 5 tonight. So, he hit a couple.
40%.
You know, I don't think he needs to shoot threes so long as
disagree.
Everyone else can.
Disagree.
I agree with Matt on this. I think he handles, like, the ball's in his hands so often of the time. Like, he's not going to shoot pull-up threes. Like, that's something he can't do, and expecting him to do that is ridiculous. The key is that he's got to be able to move the ball. He's got to be able to make the right pass. That's what's... Like, you look at the playoffs, what's held DeRozan back? It hasn't been because he can't shoot threes. That's never been what's holding him back. What's holding him back is that the double comes, and he delays, and he can't find the guy. Or, like, the ball's moving nicely, and he gets to him, and he just holds... He catches in, and he holds for a second. And that's one of the most... That's probably the one thing that annoys me the most with DeRozan is the ball moves to him, it swings to him, and he catches the ball and he holds it, and the whole defense gets set.
Right, right.
And so far this year he's been doing a lot better of a job. Things kind of went awry there at the end of the Spurs game, but okay, you know, this is only the third game of this. He clearly is trying to pass more, and he clearly is trying to actually genuinely do this.
There's no shame in losing to the Spurs, you know.
Well, there's no Kawhi, but still, though.
The Rudy Spurs, Gay! How's Rudy Gay doing?
Looked good in the first game. It's the only one I've watched.
He was good. He played 22 minutes, 5 of 8, 11 points, 5 boards, stealing a block. It's another nice pickup.
He went from the worst NBA franchise to maybe the best, so... we're all rooting for Rudy Gay. So, any other thoughts on your beloved Raptors?
I'll say this one last thing. By far, the biggest surprise, they're young guys. OG Anunoby.
He
fell to 23.
Yep.
Because of his ACL tear.
Yep.
And people thought that he was going to miss his whole rookie year. Like, and people were really overestimating how bad the injury was. And guess what? He's playing in the home opener.
I like him.
And he's playing great. And I think if teams had could see into the future and see what he's been doing, there's no way he would have gone 23. I think he's a steal of the draft so far. But for the first time, they've actually been able to put out 5-man units with no Lowry or DeRozan. And it's been very interesting to watch. And you can actually limit their minutes for once.
See, I was getting confused. OG Anunoby and Bam Adebayo, which also are very different names, but it's just the da-da-da. Adebayo.
So, Anunoby. So, Book.
DeLon Wright is the real deal. And I'd like to say that I was very high on him in our pods.
I was too. I love the single plays that I've seen him do. Like, he had a sick and one against the Bulls that I like it, with him at this point. It's just like every odd game I see him make a really cool play, and I'm like, oh, I love that guy. And that's going to translate into him being a consistent role player. And
I think in these three games he's already cemented his role.
That's
like
awesome.
He's been so impressive.
We love the one right here on Hamster Wheel Sports. So let's talk about your favorite team, James, the New York Knicks.
No.
Okay, first of all, I would like to say Free Willy. What the hell is going on there? Why is Hernan Gomez not playing?
Real good.
He
question.
Literally did not play a single minute the last game. And I have him in fantasy, and I was pissing me off.
I thought there was some sort of injury.
No, he wasn't hurt.
They
think cancer. First of all, you're rebuilding. So already there's like a reason to be playing Hernan Gomez, who of course has a higher ceiling. But I would attest that right now Hernan Gomez is a better player than Kanter. Am I crazy in thinking that?
I couldn't agree with you more. It's the Knicks, right? You know, it doesn't make sense. Ramon Sessions, Jared Jack. It
Here's the thing. So far, this season is going great. We've lost both games, and Kristaps is averaging 30 points and 8 rebounds. If that continues throughout the whole season and they go 0-82, I'm down for it. That's what I want, right? I want them to lose as many games as they can, and I want Kristaps to get as many shots as he can. I want Frankie Nicotina to come back from this injury that he has, apparently, and I want to see if he can do anything. But yeah, give it to the young guys. Like, come on. Like, I don't know. Like, give Ron Baker some shots.
Play a single minute.
It's ridiculous. He
played so well at the end of
last
year.
Unless you're an idiot, you know what the expectations for the Knicks are, and you know what the capabilities for the Knicks are. So why not match those? Why not try and develop your exciting young rookies and second-year, third-year players, and don't play Ramon Sessions. Don't play Enes Kanter. I mean, I know we just traded for him, but I just don't care. The best thing you can do is play the young guys, lose a bunch of games, and get a good draft pick. And that's all I got to say about it.
Well, Hernan Gomez is interesting now because they are rumored to be interested in Eric Bledsoe.
I know.
Who, of course, needs to be traded right now at Phoenix.
They're not going to do that. If they trade for Eric Bledsoe, then this is a perfect segue into the Eric Bledsoe talk. So we gotta get into that. But if the Knicks trade for Eric Bledsoe, I don't know, man.
Bledsoe is still only 26. He's not that old. But it's
just
funny, though,
why trade for another player on a big deal with injury problems?
Yeah, but it's...
Why? If you're the Knicks, why? Tell me. Well, why? Why do we want Eric Bledsoe?
Well, I would guess the reason they would do it is because they want to become good sooner rather than later, even if it means...
But they're not going to with
these decisions.
I'm not saying
it would be smart. I'm just saying...
I understand.
They think, okay, we get Bledsoe and Porzingis.
New York won't wait for a rebuild, even though they've won 30 games in the past 6 years.
But it's funny, though, that like I'm looking at this, but apparently New York is opposed to training Hernan Gomez.
That's what
I've heard. Hilarious.
That's
like,
why
are you not...
Yeah.
He's played 4 minutes in these first two games.
I know. What are they doing? I don't know. Let's talk Eric Bledsoe.
Hold on. I think you just indirectly called me an idiot, James, because all through the preseason pods, I was saying that I thought the Knicks had good pieces enough to make like the eighth seed in the East.
Oh,
and if I was the coach or whatever of the Knicks, I would be full on like, get us Bledsoe or you know what? If you don't, we even have enough to like scrap for an eighth seed because... I'd play all these guys like Jack, who hasn't made my predictions look good with getting on Shaqt and a Fool already.
Well, Jack was a DNP coach's decision.
He didn't play in the last game.
He played the first one though, and he wasn't. Yeah. But
but if they ran out of lineup, like I don't know what they would have to give up, but like if they could keep their pieces and kind of. Put out a lineup of Bledsoe, Hardaway, Lee, Kanter, Porzingis. Like, that's a quality starting five.
Yeah.
Obviously.
But, I mean, when it comes to optimism and the Knicks just don't belong in the same breath. It's crazy. I try to be optimistic with the Knicks.
Oh, I don't. I want them to fail. I hate Dolan.
Sam.
Let him burn in hell.
I've regretted this decision the past 7 years of my life, becoming a Knicks fan.
Well, you can't go back. You can't undo that decision.
You know what? I've really thought about it, but I'm still here. So,
So let's talk about Bledsoe. So Eric Bledsoe has become a trade target after general manager of the Suns, Ryan McDonough, told reporters Monday that Bledsoe has likely played his final game for the franchise. So they sent him home. What are you showing me?
Oh, we're just looking at some recent Eric Bledsoe tweets.
This is what started it all.
These real?
Yeah.
These are real. So 2 days ago, Eric Bledsoe tweeted, ha, exclamation point. Very vague. But the next day, the 22nd, was that yesterday?
Yeah.
Eric Bledsoe tweeted, I don't want to be here. So this is now has 43,000 retweets, 88,000 likes. And this is sort of what started this whole conversation about Eric Bledsoe, and it's now why he's being traded. But what makes it even better is that after Eric Bledsoe tweeted, I don't want to be here, he sat down with the GM of the team and they had a conversation about the tweet. And Eric Bledsoe's explanation was that he was at the hair salon when he tweeted this. He was at the hair salon with his girl, and he just didn't want to be there. But the GM didn't believe that explanation, and now they're trading him.
Well, I'm sure there was some... I'm sure it wasn't just that they didn't believe Bledsoe.
That's it.
There was some animosity.
That's it.
Yeah.
Why would you not, if you're Eric Bledsoe, think that that could be misconstrued
by
your followers?
Well, I think he just clearly wants out.
I think it was construed perfectly.
So, they at the end of the day, they mutually want to be away from each other. They want to part ways.
Well, the thing, though, this isn't just a guy demanding a trade and like, all right, we'll figure it out. They said, we're done with him. So, like, he's not going to play another game.
Yeah, they sent him home.
Why? Does he have
attitude?
Is he a locker room?
I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
He says he doesn't want to be here. And
but he could, but he's talking about the hair salon.
Really, he is. It's true. But you can't really fault Eric Bledsoe here, right? You know, like.
No, you can still fault him.
He's
not acting very professionally.
You have to be sympathetic of the situation.
Well, to be honest, I don't care for either. I know the Suns owner doesn't give a shit about winning.
Fair enough.
And also.
But Eric Bledsoe clearly does.
Eric Bledsoe's a good player. That's all I know. I know he killed it for fantasy last year.
All right, so now that Eric Bledsoe is hot on the trading block, we're going to look at three fake trades courtesy of Worldwide Wob on Twitter. The first one features the Cleveland Cavaliers, who I think would be a pretty good fit for Eric Bledsoe. You know, they were kind of considering looking at him earlier in the year when they were going to trade Kyrie. So this trade would involve Eric Bledsoe and Troy Daniels being sent for Iman Shumpert, Channing Frye, and Ante Zizek.
And obviously a first.
Yeah.
There'd have to be some picks in here.
Yeah.
The question is, if you're the Cavs, though, they don't want to give up that Brooklyn pick, right?
For sure.
I don't think you do, because the whole point of getting the Brooklyn pick was if LeBron leaves.
Yes.
And the risk would still be here.
And on the other hand, you have to think that if you're the Phoenix Suns, a team that obviously is perfectly content in being complete garbage this year and just, you know, still trying to develop their players just like the Knicks and get another good pick, you would think in this deal, the thing they'd be looking for the most is, you know, expiring contracts and good picks, right?
What I like about this trade is it would get Isaiah Thomas into the exact same nightmare scenario he was in Phoenix with a team.
Eric Bledsoe.
He's on a team with three starting point guards. So
don't forget Jose Calderon.
Isaiah Thomas would be like, "Why does my life suck so much?
Yeah.
Why does my NBA life suck so much? Yeah. Is it because I'm 5'9"? So boo, get it out of here.
You know what? I still feel like this. I still think that Eric Bledsoe, I think he's going to be a Cav. I don't know if this is the trade, but I just have a feeling that they're going to make it happen. You know, and they have some pieces. They have some picks.
You start him until January.
I just think they want him enough, you know?
And you can run.
It makes sense.
Isaac. Like, I just think back to the days of Chris Paul and Bledsoe being out there together. I don't know. Isaiah Bledsoe. Bledsoe's, you know, one of those like pit bull types. Like he plays a little bigger than he is.
Yep.
And really the Cavs are definitely all in for this year, so it doesn't really matter who you pick.
But they're not no, they're not completely all in this year.
It's unclear.
That's why they wanted that Brooklyn pick so bad.
Yeah.
They're not completely all in. I don't think they'll give up that pick to get Bledsoe.
Okay. Second potential trade. This is the Denver Nuggets trading Kenneth Faried, the Manimal, and Emmanuel Mudiay for Eric Bledsoe. Now,
I just don't think this is.
I don't really think it works either. You know, it would really be great for the Nuggets, I think, because, you know, they really seem like if they could get a solid point guard, then, you know, they'd be even closer to where they want to be. And, you know, they're a team that is really going to make a big jump this year, I think a lot of people think.
If they had Bledsoe, man, that'd be a good team.
It's a good team, for sure. And, you know, at the same time, they're kind of trying to move away from Kenneth Faried, but it still kind of seems like a bit of a stretch that they could pull this off. The third one which I think is also pretty intriguing. Not the trade itself, but just the concept and just getting Eric Bledsoe to the Bucks. So this trade would be Eric Bledsoe for John Henson and Thon Maker. Thon Maker?
They're never going to get rid of Thon Maker.
Yeah.
They're never going to get let go of him.
Thon Maker, like, he was kind of, he was part of this organizational belief in length, right?
Yeah.
And you just look at how well he finished last year and in the playoffs. He, the sky is the ceiling for him. He looks to be the perfect kind of guy going into this new NBA. He can play the five. He can protect the rim. He's got a three-point shot and it should only get better. I agree. I don't think you're giving up Thon Maker here. I still think the Bucks are a potential target. I know that the discussed trade with when it comes to Kyrie was giving up Brogdon and Middleton for Kyrie, and the Bucks did not want to do that.
That's tough.
I think Brogdon definitely would be coming the other way.
You gotta think, you know, why are you doing this trade if you're the Suns, and you know there's gotta be a first round pick in there, right?
Are you kidding me? If you're the Suns and you get John Henson and Thon Maker, you're like, where
John
do
Henson
I
that
sign?
Good?
Where do I sign? Yeah. No, John Henson's not. Thon Maker is. You said, where do I sign?
Really?
Because he is going to be a transcendent player. He is a seven footer who has range.
I don't know if I'm all in on Thon Maker.
I know you just don't want to trade
it. I like this. I like that we'll all pronounce it differently.
I do too. Yeah, I'm gonna stick with Mocker because I think
is it Mocker? Is that the correct name?
Yeah, according to like Kevin Arnovitz, who the
he would know.
Well, I mean, I do want to say it the right way, but I just announcers part of their job
the
is to research how to say the name.
Lowe and Arnovitz insist it's Mocker.
Okay, well, I'll
then the greatest part about all of this is that all three of these trades don't affect, according to Hollinger. Don't affect the Phoenix Suns' winning percentage, but they take at least 10 wins off of the receiving team.
No, because I see now why. Because they're going off of Per, which right now is just completely wrong.
Right.
Because I realize that when
not applicable. Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah. Zizek was a 50.2. Yeah. So just a devastating loss.
Oh my god.
So that's great. We're about done here, guys.
Yep.
We went all around the league. And I think we pretty much covered most of the first week action. But Book, I just wanted to finish off because you missed last week's episode due to you were attending your fantasy draft. So I just wanted to hear a little bit about your fantasy team.
Oh, God.
My fantasy team, first of all, my name is Culture Reset.
Nice.
And got off to a really tough start. Starting the year 2-6, but I had a really good draft.
Was Westbrook the first pick?
Yeah, I picked second overall, and my league doesn't count turnovers, and I'm punting field goal percentage.
Oh,
so Westbrook kind of, I don't know. In my mind, I was going for Westbrook. So we'll see. Jimmy Butler has been disappointing so far. He was my second round guy, and Miles Turner got concussed, which really hurt me last week. But Miles Turner looks good, though, when he plays.
I like that Patrick Beverley pick, though.
Yeah, and Rubio, I'm happy about. I don't know, I still feel very optimistic about my team. And one of my flyers at the end, Torian Prince, I'm super high on. He's playing well. So,
it's a garbage time guy.
And then my bench are just three guys that I'm kind of...
In Atlanta, it's all garbage time.
That's what I'm saying.
And with Jay Triano, immediately Marquise Chris gets in the starting lineup. It was a great game. I'm looking. Nice. I'm happy.
Oh yeah! Shout out Jay Triano, by the way, coaching in the
NBA.
I'm
very happy, actually.
I think he's a terrible coach.
Why?
Because he coached terrible Raptors years.
Because he had 2 years where he coached the Raptors and they were bad, and then he left and they continued to stay bad.
Yeah, but.
Sorry, just one last note on the Eric Bledsoe drama. DeAndre Jordan tweeted, "Come back home, bro." That's all for now. All
right, we're going to follow the Eric Bledsoe story throughout the season. And, we'll be back at you next week with hopefully another exciting week of NBA action, full of stories. So you've been listening to Hamster Wheel Sports. And remember, sports!
Technical, number 23, 3-second violation, number 11. Traveling, number 4.